नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
a person who is spiritually engaged 24 hours a day
but is still suffering from disease. In fact, however, he is neither suffering nor diseased. Otherwise, he could not be engaged 24 hours a day in spiritual activities. The example may be given in this connection that sometimes dirty foam or garbage is seen floating on the water of the Ganges. This is called Nidadharma, a function of the water. But one who goes to the Ganges does not mind the foam and dirty things floating on the water. With the sand, he pushes away such nasty things, bathes in the Ganges, and gains the beneficial results. Therefore, one who is situated in the spiritual status of life is unaffected by foam and garbage or any superficial dirty things. This is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Yahacha Shahari Yasya Dasi Karmana Masahira Nikilas Papibastasu Jiva Mukta Savichati. A person acting in the service of Krishna with his body, mind, words is a liberated person, even within this material world. Therefore, one is forbidden to regard the Guru as an ordinary human being. Guru Namatira Narahisa. The spiritual master's acharya is always situated in the spiritual status of life. Birth, death, old age, and disease do not affect him. According to the Hari Bhakti Vilas, therefore, after the disappearance of an acharya, his body is never burned to ashes, for it is a spiritual body. The spiritual body is always unaffected by material conditions. Only can understand. Gyanam jana shrataya chakshuru nilitam dhinam tasmaya shri guru ve maha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Arvind Virata Shiva Shri Gauru Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Once again, translation. One who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and the soul becomes too attached to the bodily concept of life. Consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union with and separation from his family, society, and nation. As long as this continues, one continues his material life, one is liberated. Once again, here in the 10th canto, and Srila Prabhupada is, this is in Prabhupada's last year with us, so this is going on to 1977, Bhuvaneshwar. In February, Prabhupada completed the 9th canto and started the 10th. And then, up until November, Srila Prabhupada decreased the amount as his sickness increased. He decreased the amount of translation that he was doing and commentary, but still he continued to do it. So as Prabhupada here says, Nija Dharma, Nija means your own Swadharma. Someone has their own Dharma. The nature of water is by Indra's grace, you know, that Indra shared out some of his sinful activities in four different directions. One of them was in water, which I guess prior to that time, water didn't carry the type of foam that it does now. It doesn't gather foam. And you see that, especially if you're going to the Jamuna around Delhi, or you see the Ganges. And that seemed to be a new phenomenon because Rupa Goswami says, Gangamba Sukhudguna Swimaswarka, that even then he's talking about the bubbles, foam, and mud in the Ganges. So externally, the Nija Dharma of his body is birth, death, old age, disease. And it happens. Not only does it happen to living entities, even Krishna, in a sense, conforms to the dynamics of the material world. He comes at a certain point, he leaves at a certain point, and when he leaves behind the body for different purposes. And one of them is just for that, so that we're made aware that sometimes devotees have this very euphoric idea of what spiritual life means. You're never going to take up Krishna consciousness. Why do I get sick? Why am I getting old? Why did I have a car accident? Why are my children sick? But because you're Krishna conscious doesn't mean that these things don't happen. They happen, and they continue to happen. But they should happen in a different way, especially if some is spiritually situated. But the beginning starts here. So he says, Anevambhita, at least one should have knowledge. At least one should have knowledge that he's not this body. And that's a commodity that classical state theory. And that's a commodity that devotees easily have accessible, because right at the very beginning of Krishna consciousness, right in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, first thing, Krishna is talking about Advaimaham Jatunasam Devi Nasmin Jita Devi, making a very clear distinction between the body and the soul as a constitutional statement. You don't have this, you can't even move forward, you can't even advance to further stages of life. And although realization of being this body and realization of not being this body and knowledge of not being this body are two different things. So here, you could say Srila Prabhupada here defines what is realization of this body, that even though all of these things are going on, one is not disturbed of it. Dhiras tatra namuyati. But Krishna also uses this word dhira. They're happening. Pain is there. But pain doesn't affect my ability to think about Krishna. I don't know if you've experienced pain. Pain can be extremely intense. And ladies have experienced pain, because childbirth is supposed to be amongst the top three. Some doctors say it's the top thing. So when I was in a very painful situation once, I went to the hospital, so I was banging on the wall. The first thing the doctor said to me, "It's not as bad as giving birth." My respect for ladies increased exponentially at that point. To experience pain, because it isn't that the pain goes away just because I'm chanting Hare Krishna, and at the same time, that one's consciousness and dependence doesn't waver, that requires increasing realization. And of course, the idea something like what yogis do is that maybe yogis completely disassociate themselves by dint of their mystic power from the experience itself. But it's artificial. That in itself is artificial, because Prabhupada said, you should tolerate Krishna's giving you some pain, then accept that. It has something to do with our spiritual life, with our recognition that this body is not a good vehicle to be attached to. It gives pain. This is the way of the material world, and we should learn how to move on from that. And then ultimately, we also have some karma to burn up. And one way of burning that up by Krishna's arrangement is a certain degree of suffering or inconvenience. So getting away from it is a form of escapism, and it's contrary to the principle of Krishna consciousness. Anyavilashita-shunya, jnana, karmadina, ritam. In this case, jnana means that one wants to be free from suffering in the material world. But a devotee is willing to accept that suffering. Narayana Parasarvena Tachana Bhagavati. So Svarga, Apavarga, whatever difficult situation one finds himself, then the body is willing to accept that. Sarabhi. But the basis, the function of the working basis needs to be this increasing awareness and cultivation that one is not this body, because ultimately our whole culture, our whole spiritual culture is based just on that very it's based on the idea that we're meant for spiritual cultivation, spiritual development, as opposed to economic development, as opposed to sense gratification. And they're based on two different concepts. The economic development, sense gratification especially, is based on a bodily identity or bodily identification, or at least great attachment. Because you can see people who say, I'm not this body, but it sure doesn't look like you're behaving like that. You're really behaving like you're this body. Why? Because I may know that, but still the attachment remains very strong. There isn't a suitable cultivation that purifies the heart from that type of attachment. And knowledge is good, but knowledge, jnana, only becomes big jnana by the purification of the heart, which frees one from the attachments that come due to being in this body, due to connecting with this matter. The material world is very convincing. It's a very, very convincing place. And this material body, this identity is very convincing, just like when you walk outside in the world out there, it's also very convincing that this is reality, this is going on forever, and it'll just go from strength to strength. But it's not. And why is it? Why is that illusion so strong? Because Bhagavatam begins by saying it's the reflection of reality. So when you look at a reflection of an apple in a mirror, it really looks real. It doesn't have certain characteristics that reality has. You can neither taste it, you can't smell it, but it sure looks real. So Tejo Vidanyatra Nimaya Tisarga Ambrisha. So first verse says that this material world is actually a reflection of the spiritual world, and because that's the absolute reality, this also looks very, very real. And not only does it look very real, but there are certain energies that convince us that it's very real, and that's Krishna's illusory potencies. So the illusion is to think that this is the ultimate reality, as opposed to it being just simply a temporary reality or a reflection of the reality. So my bodies have this concept, this idea of Parigambhavad, which is that the material world is actually just a reflection of reality, and therefore it's not real. Every reflection is a real thing. Otherwise, how can it? A reflection in itself doesn't have an independent identity, but it certainly exists. So your reflection in the mirror exists, but it's dependent on something else. It has its origins. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, both with Sarvam Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati, brought up this point, this sort of misconception of what the world is and what the body is, that all of these are both energies of Krishna. And you can't say that this is an illusion, because then you're saying that's also an illusion. This is real, because that's also real. So this is, and we see that this very fundamental principle is something that Srila Prabhupada emphasized. And that here we are in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We're halfway through the Bhagavatam, and it keeps coming up and keeps coming up. Because unless this is here, then what happens? He becomes too attached. Unless knowledge is there, then one has the knowledge, and then one has the determination. Let me now live a life that's based on my being a spirit soul, not being a material body. And of course, there's also sort of transition, or sometimes you could say a gray area between the two. That's why we say Anya Dasita Shunyam. Pure devotion means that I function and act as if I'm a servant of Krishna. And I simply act for Krishna's pleasure. And material life means karma, means that I'm acting as if I'm this body. Someone may have this knowledge, but still, karma mishra bhakti, it may be mixed. The concept of devotion is still mixed because the attachment is strong. So people make concession. The attachment is strong that I should enjoy this world. The devotional service is meant to facilitate enjoyment. Or, if it's not meant to facilitate enjoyment, a step better is that there should be some enjoyment because we shouldn't be too fanatical. And a certain level of enjoyment is there. And ultimately, the idea is that, no, only Krishna's enjoyment is what really counts. So because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, then how do you know? Prabhupada gives this verse. So I was going to say a verse that comes before or after. Vasudeva bhagavati bhakti yogi janayati ashu vairagyam gyanam chayaravaya. But how do you know whether our knowledge of spiritual identity is really maturing and progressing? Because the detachment should be there. Vairagya should be there. And if vairagya is not there, then and it's not increasing, but rather attachment remains very firm. Attachment to family, society, and nation. Then the cultivation or the purification isn't really taking place in the proper way. Knowledge is not maturing. Just like in Hungary, I've got seeds, mango seeds, and we have in the temple room beautiful from Siddhabaku, from the actual original Siddhabaku in Puri. We have a tree. But it's out of its environment. And so although the tree grows, and the mango tree grows, but it doesn't give any mangoes. So similarly, when although the seed may be there, but if the seed is not being cultivated in the proper environment, then actually it won't give the fruit. And you can also see that here. When we had Chaitanya College, then we were told that in days of yore, back in days of the Earl of Coventry, then they used to grow pineapples and all kinds of other things in the walled garden because they would replicate the same type of environment. The walled garden, I don't know, it must be there because they have these programs once a year that had this wall down the middle, aside from having a 10-foot high wall all around, had a wall down the middle, and that wall was heated. It was a heated wall. And so between having the wall and also having that heated wall in the middle, for those plants that were in the immediate area, they were able to thrive in an environment that would be, I guess, conducive for growing those things. And of course they also had greenhouse, and greenhouse is where you really replicate an environment. But that's a thing that everyone may experience for themselves. It's a subjective thing. For it, one needs to be very honest. Ihayasya vayardasya karma manasa gira. So in one's activities, one's words, one's mind, everything is engaged in Krishna's service. That's a good sign, because it's the process of purification. Body, easier. Words, yeah, especially if you like to talk a lot. But mind, that then becomes quite difficult. This is where I come in with Manashiksha. So I'm going to say just a few words about Herman Levy, that's his Manashuksha book, beautiful Manashuksha book, which is out there now, which is out there also available for sale. But mind, I don't know if you have experience, but yesterday when we came here, I was thinking this mind is a really amazing phenomenon. Yesterday we were having these debates with very, very lively, interesting debates with Pandu Singh. And so last night I had trouble going to sleep last night because it was near Jodhakadasi. So I drank, but no eating. And when you don't eat, when you don't sleep, it's very good. And you feel good, you feel fresh and lively. Who followed New Jolly Hennessy? I asked yesterday. Wow, that's good for your health to drink. Very good. And who just didn't eat? Okay. But finally, when I went to sleep, I had this dream, and it was me and this scorpion. And all the arguments that I was arguing about with yesterday, the scorpion was giving all these arguments, and you know, scorpions, they have their tails up, and his tail up like that as if he was going to sting me. And finally, at the end of the dream, I whacked him. That's an amazing thing. Mind just makes all this up, and I mean, sure, everyone's got lots and lots of stories about what the mind can do. So controlling this mind is very, very difficult. And ultimately, becoming free from bodily identification is only possible when you engage the mind in Krishna service, control the mind, and also become free from identifying with your mind. The body is one thing, but I think this, so what? That's your mind, what you're thinking. Why do you identify with what you're thinking? If you're thinking something very good, then we'll examine it with our intelligence. We may see that this is something of asset. But I think, and Prabhupada was so much onto this, I think, who cares what you think? It's important what Krishna thinks, because what Krishna thinks is the absolute truth. What we think, it's just a product of our conditioning. So what? So what do we think? If you see this book outside, this Manashiksha. So Raghunath Das Goswami wrote this book. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives a list of five books. Yeah, that one should study. Manashiksha is one. Bilak Kusumanjali is also out there. That's another. And these are books according to one for progressive advancement in Krishna consciousness. One should regularly hear. I was also told that at a certain point in Goyamad Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur had his disciples regularly studying Manashiksha, which is not a big book because it's only 11 verses. As with everything in Krishna consciousness, they have real, real deep meanings. So, giving instructions to your mind, similarly we have Manasadi, you know, what is that song? Not Manasadi, the other one, Bajavare Mana Shinandananda Abhaya Charana Pravinda. So instructions to the mind in itself is quite interesting because it's a sort of a psychological practice. Well, talk to yourself, and that's what you're doing. You're giving instructions to your mind. Of course, the instructions are coming from where? Instructions are coming from the transcendental realm. They teach us how to regulate our mind so that when our mind does come up with different ideas for sense enjoyment, which will reinforce our bodily identification, then we know, is this good, is this not good, why we shouldn't do this, what alternative we should practice. and at different stages of Krishna consciousness. And you find in this book, Raghunath Das Goswami starts with very beginning, na dharmam, na dharmam, shruti gam, nirukta kuru. So Krishna says, sabha dhamma, pay attention. So he starts with the very basics of spiritual life and sense control, mind control. Although even as he progresses, he keeps coming up with this dhamma, with this duplicity and hypocrisy. Don't be a hypocrite, even as you're advancing in spiritual life and Krishna consciousness. And learning how to control the mind, certainly by studying the process of Manashiksha, instructions to the mind, which Raghunath Das Goswami does, helps us to actually become free from bodily identification, which doesn't just mean this gross one, it also means the subtle one. And that's even more difficult. But they come together. But ultimately, they'll only come with purification of the heart. It's not a yogic exercise. Throw out all your thoughts. Free your mind from all thoughts. Yeah, maybe you can do it for a little while. But ultimately, why are you thinking? You're thinking because you have desires. So, and those desires are always there. It's the nature, nija dharma. Just like the nija dharma of the material world is suffering, the nija dharma of the soul is desire. You can't separate the desire. Desire will always be there. But desire for what? Some desire is favorable, others is not. So bandhuratmatmanasasya jainatmayvatmanajita anatmanasdushatvritti. So either it's your friend or it's your enemy. But it's a question of how we teach our mind. And that was one of our discussions yesterday, Harry Potter. We're going to get back to the authors. We're going to have a bad opinion of Hare Krishnas. But anyway, stuffing the minds of innocent children full of all kinds of things. And I mean, that's the least of it, what to speak of. So many other horrible things that are being programmed. Extreme violence. That are being programmed into children's minds. Once it goes in, it molds and it becomes the birthplace of desire, and desire seeks start to grow again. Just from those things, and the psychiatrists have the nerve to say that seeing violence has nothing to do with children later on and people becoming aggressive. They should see a psychiatrist. How can you even think like that? There's people who are bred on violence and become anesthetized to high levels of violence and so on. That gentleman wouldn't even want to see. I don't know if you did it, but I know that, although I would never see monster movies or any of these things, but even when I was young, I just close my eyes when things got a little too aggressive. Now this is what everyone's breathing on. Everyone's thriving on these things, violence and aggression. So worst thing I used to see was a roadrunner and what kind of coyote? Woolly coyote. So that's really tame by comparison to what goes on now. And all of those things have an impression, and those impressions go into the mind. So, last point, and then we'll just stop. Everybody's like to make any further comments or questions. Therefore, one has to be very careful. If we really want to advance in spiritual life, you have to be very careful as to what you put in your mind. And what you put in your mind is what you hear, what you see, because things such as movies, television, you may think that they're innocent. There's nothing that's innocent. Everything is poison. Everything other than Tavakatamitam, Tata Jivanam, anything other than Krishna Katha is poison. That is this poison for those who are trying to advance in spiritual life. You may make compromise. Well, it's not so bad. This has some spiritual content. It's good for preaching. Let's go see the Matrix and so on. But no, it also carries a lot of other dirty baggage. And that dirty baggage gets deposited within the mind and the heart. So here we are trying to clean our hearts, and at the same time we put other things in it, and it becomes a lose-lose situation. We're losing out materially because we're not planning to become great materialists, and losing out spiritually because we're putting so much other new garbage into our minds and senses. So it is spiritual life, and therefore vairagya, detachment. Detachment has to be there. But jnana vairagya, so, and as Sarvam Bhattacharya says, vairagya vidyana nija bhakti yoga, this is bhakti yoga, vairagya and vidya. Shikshashtamekam purusha purana, since time immemorial, this is always the case, this science of Krishna consciousness that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give, two main features, vairagya and vidya. But you don't have vairagya unless you have vidya. So without studying these books, without studying Srila Prabhupada's books, one actually will not become detached. It requires very serious attention to these signs of Srimad Bhagavatam. And when you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, when you hear the words of the acharyas, then one's mind becomes illuminated. Kimba apare svaraha sadhya vidya varudyate adhikriti vishushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushushush It's an easy thing. Everyone knows it. We say it 100 times a day. You're not this body. But actually realizing that you're not this body requires serious discipline. It requires a certain way of life. And if you want to know that way of life, which includes instructions to the mind, then please purchase this Manasiksha. It's a beautiful, beautiful and very powerful book. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ladies, gentlemen.
You should just mention that edition of the book contains also your commentary on
this book. Yeah, which I'm not so crazy about. it was spoken material is never the same as written material. I'm just going over edited work for booklet what I have out for Karthi, which is on Damodar Lila. And I write the book, and I reread it, and I read it, and I send it off to the editor, and then I keep sending it back, SRS1, SRS2, SRS3, SRS5. But it's a different thing when you just say something. That's what Prabhupada said. You can say any old thing, but when you write it down, well, he said any bad thing. But when you write it down, it's something else. So, yeah, you tend to think things out a lot better. Put a lot more time and energy into it. But what can you do? There it is. Mahaprabhu, you want to ask something?
I'm going to ask a question, but maybe you'll cover it in the evening. You know, in our society, you're talking about knowledge of renunciation. Some people don't have that inclination, but they want to be engaged in devotional service. And so what's your take on, we have a Brahminical society, which focuses on devotional principles, practice, and a lot of goodness. What is your take on how people will be engaged who don't have that qualification or don't have that nature? Because as we stand now, that's the nature that we seem that we require that nature for some of the functional wellness.
Well, Brahminical, Prabhupada wants everyone to become Brahminical, and it's possible by training. It doesn't mean everyone becomes a Brahmin, it just means that they become part of a society in which people learn to practice the activities of the mode of goodness. The last line here is, as long as this continues, one continues in material life. So you can be engaged in Krishna consciousness, but unless one actually cultivates that much good, but one will continue in material life. So when Kapila Dev discusses devotional service and different modes of material nature, but unless it's in mode of goodness, which ultimately leads to transcendence, it's a formula for rebirth, which is fine, because in the next birth they'll continue. But for those who are really determined to go back home, back to Godhead, then they really need to apply themselves. Samskaras, of course, is there in terms of our conduct, how we live. We don't have necessarily, our generation doesn't have garbhana samskaras, other next generation do. Samskaras, purification, learning, these are the things that really cultivate brahminical lifestyle and awaken the desire to go back to Godhead. And if someone doesn't do that but does service, then they should also be engaged. Certainly, shakha karma vidvan, so I don't disturb them, Krishna says. Yes, sir.
Maharaj, at the beginning of the class, you were speaking about how devotees perceive sickness that comes to them. Krishna's kind of instruction on how they can do it. Now we see with our senior devotees, as they age, they're getting illnesses. Sometimes there's certain episodes of major sickness and disciples
suffering.
And often there's a feeling of like we're praying for the illness to go away, or we're the followers are praying with a mood of like, oh no, you know, I hope they get through this, etc., etc. But if it's already ordained and the senior Vaishnava, the spiritual master, the acharya is already taking it as this is just, you know, the foam in the Ganga and they're just pushing it aside, how is the follower supposed to kind of take that scenario and pray accordingly?
The Prabhupada gave us a nice formula. So if you so desire, please cure Sri Prabhupada. That's how we prayed in 1977, which accommodates both. There's a natural sentiment that we have, that we always want to keep whoever's here, we want to keep them here. On the other hand, we're not going to argue with Krishna. And ultimately, it's going, whatever Krishna wants, that's what's going to happen anyway. And then, of course, there's a certain level to which you go. How far do you want to keep someone here? In fact, I just had this conversation a few minutes ago. How far do you want to keep someone here when they're incapable of doing service, when they're suffering, when they're in a very... does it become selfishness on our part? And ultimately, what's the loss for devotee? The devotee means service. So where do you get to serve best? And if someone serves best by leaving their body, then we recognize that, and our prayer is that under all circumstances they can always remember Krishna. So it's a balance, it's a very fine balance, and it's certainly something that all of us as individuals also face. How far do we keep maintaining this body? Do we do it really just for service, or we just do it due to attachment? And I know we're willing to let go. So Srila Prabhupada let go. He said, well, Krishna left it to me. But then, and Prabhupada had lots of reasons to say a lot of the upsets in Krishna consciousness, you can see, could have been potentially averted by Srila Prabhupada's presence, but Prabhupada decided not to do so. And so we need to see that. There's a verse that in seventh canto of Narada Muni, he's talking about Varnashram. Vanaprastha. He's talking about Varnashram. He's talking about the Vanaprastha ashram. And he says, when the Vanaprastha becomes too old and invalid or unable to continue doing service, then he should give up his body. Pretty different, but at least the desire, how long you pursue wanting to stay in this world.
Following on from that, your recent podcast, you said that Krishna already knows. So I shouldn't even ask, because what's the point of asking? Someone already knows what we desire.
Yeah, but devotees are sentient beings, and we have a sentiment. So, and Krishna responds to that, and although Krishna can also change things. But nonetheless, nija dharma, this is the dharma of the material world. You just can't hang on here forever. You gotta go. And I think I mentioned that before. That was one devotee, our brother Narmada Swami. Well, he realized that he had cancer. He went to Vrindavan and he fasted to death. He would eat and he didn't drink, which means 60 days at the most. Something like that. That's pretty determined. That's like being a yogi. So, why stay any longer? I was just passing through the Guru Maharaj, and he was giving me some reference when Srila Prabhupada more or less did that. He stopped eating and drinking. He more or less stopped. Ladies, anyone? Okay. Okay.
Please forgive me if I speak like a devil's advocate for the next couple of minutes.
Put you in my dreams.
You see, it's demonstrable from psychology these days that actually what we are capable of realizing is not reality, but perception. Our brain is not neural connections as such that we do not understand or do not appreciate reality. A very simple experiment can be done psychologically.
Psychology means matter. Psychology means matter and mind. And perception of reality changes when matter becomes empowered by spirit, which is also a topic here in this purport that we didn't touch. In other words, as you practice devotional service, the body becomes spiritualized and mind becomes empowered by other powers that it doesn't otherwise have.
In the case of Vishnu, they were Mahavan, the question was asked just before he left his body, that he had lived for a long time. Please tell me, what is reality? He should have known, because the Guru was actually Krishna himself. That is reality. How come he didn't know this?
Who said he didn't know?
Shikhandi asked him before he left his body that, I don't remember the Sanskrit, but I can tell you in Bengali. That is, you have lived for such a long time. What is your estimation of reality?
I don't know, but there may not be a very good translation of Mahabharata, but Bhishmadeva is Mahajan. He certainly knows Krishna is the supreme reality. There's not a question of that. So there's a verse in Bhagavatam, Bhishmadeva says, Nayasya Parichat Rajan, that no one really knows Krishna's plan. Because ultimately only Krishna knows his plan, because we're very limited. But Bhishmadeva certainly knew what reality was. That's why he's a Mahajan.
But in that case, why did he ask Shikhandi to, who is throwing these arrows?
No. So who's throwing the arrows? Yes, because it's in terms of what's cause and effect, same thing in the Bhagavatam. He said, how is it possible that Pandava is suffering so much when Krishna's their personal friend? So the reason why things happen is not because he doesn't know what reality is. It's just because no matter what part of reality you know, you only know a little part of it. And it's much more than what we think. So is it time? Is it fate? Is it Krishna's will? Certainly not the karma.
is called the last Krishna's will. If he wants you to know the real thing, then he will know. But if he doesn't, then no, no chance.
Yes, but what you'll know is a part of reality. Because we're just a very small, so our capacity to realize that. But yes, Krishna, that's what the spiritual life means. Krishna empowers you, he reveals himself as revelation. And it's not possible by the mind or by the senses, but it's possible by Krishna's will. But in order to make the mind and senses susceptible and inclined for Krishna's will, one has to have spiritual practice. And the senses become, and that's a very wonderful science, how the actual senses become empowered by spiritual practice, and ultimately how they become really empowered by prema, to perceive things that otherwise they're not capable of perceiving. But even then, Krishna's unlimited, and we're limited, and our time's up.
You use the word perceive, that means psychologically, it is true that all we are capable of.
Psychologically, nothing's true. Psychology doesn't know anything of truth. Psychology just speculates. What we know is in the Bible. That's true.
Okay, to put it very simply, is it true that we are capable of only seeing perceptions, not reality?
That's third time, I'm just keeping the same thing. With your senses, you're seeing this world, but you only see part of reality. If you look at this floor, do you see what actually is on the floor? You don't see atoms. This floor is not linoleum, it's atoms. You don't see atoms. So even your senses are imperfect. You give imperfect knowledge.
But we can use it in STM.
But if I read Srimad Bhagavatam, then I know that this is not just linoleum, but it's atoms. And I'll even know what the atoms are made up of. And that's how I get to perceive things. Shastra judges. You see through Shastra. That's real knowledge.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.